Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Brad, and today Start Here's got a special bonus episode for you. When the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade 17 months ago, it dramatically changed access to abortion in America.
We had 80 pro-life people in one room together when we found out, and we were all thrilled and excited.
I feel disrespected. I feel like my country doesn't care about me.
In the days after the Dobbs decision, doctors warned that women would be hurt.
A lot of times people ask, like, what's the worst that can happen if people don't have access to abortion? And really, the worst that can happen is death.
21 states have now either banned or severely restricted access to abortion. And all these states do have a narrow exception, allowing the procedure to save the life of the mother. But doctors say these exceptions, written by legislators, are confusing and vague. Doctors have no certainty that they can act, how they can act. They can face fines of up to $100,000, loss of their medical licenses, and in at least two states, up to life in prison. So, in recent months, ABC News started to make calls to doctors on the front lines.
They're essentially asking us as physicians to wait until a patient is so sick. So at the very, very brink of permanent harm and disability before intervening.
Imagine if you went to the emergency room with a gunshot wound and you needed three doctors to approve care for you before it was allowed to be administered.
Is 25% chance of death, is that enough? Does she have to have a 75% chance of death? Who gets to decide? Do you want the government making your medical decisions?
Our team talked to pregnant patients who faced life-threatening emergencies.
How much blood did you lose in the end?
Half the blood in her
half
body.
Half the blood
half
in my
the
body.
These interviews are part of a special investigation by my colleagues Diane Sawyer and Rachel Scott. And here's what's so unique about the reporting and the women they found. These women, they weren't looking for elective abortions. These were procedures that they needed because carrying their pregnancies to term was just too dangerous for them. Or they knew their babies had fatal conditions and wouldn't survive. So, in this Start Here special, Rachel Scott brings us stories of some of these women and their doctors who have felt powerless to help them. Rachel is going to take it from here.
This investigation all started because these new laws have rapidly changed the landscape of women's health. So we wanted to see what that looked like on the ground, see how these laws were playing out in clinics and exam rooms across large sections of America, and document some of the consequences. The stories we were tracking started out hopeful.
Hello.
Hi, Kristen. It's Dr. Mansfield.
Kristen and I and her husband, Stephen, had waited months for this phone call.
Are you guys together?
We are.
Because we have really good news.
They were finally pregnant.
Are you ready?
Yes.
It's a girl!
But 4 months in, Kristen's water broke. It was way too early. Kristen and her husband, Stephen, raced to the hospital. But by the time they arrived, she lost nearly all her amniotic fluid.
Within the first 30 minutes of being there, they measured the amniotic fluid, and there was a centimeter, I believe. Mm-hmm. And there's no way.
No way that her baby girl would survive. While being examined, Kristen's fever spiked. She began shaking violently and vomiting. She was showing signs of sepsis, an infection that can be fatal. Kristen's condition worsened, but her pregnancy continued.
Her heart was beating, and again, it goes back to that. Because her heart was beating, there was nothing that they could do. But how much of a gray area? Like, just because her heart is beating, she's literally dying inside of me as I lay on the bed going septic.
What Kristen needed was an immediate termination to save her life. She would be able to get that in most states in the country, but she lives in Texas. So even though she was in grave danger, because of the new law, her doctors had to be able to prove to the hospital medical board that she was sick enough to receive the termination.
What about my life? We didn't ask for that. We didn't want that. That was the situation we were in, and our hands were tied. Our doctors were tied. Our doctor, our nurses were crying at my bedside, wishing they could do something with blank stares on their faces because they literally couldn't do anything until the blood work showed that I was dying.
So Kristen waited and waited. We reviewed her medical records. It took 22 hours for the decision to be made to save her life. Her pregnancy was terminated. She spent 5 days in the hospital recovering from the septic infection. And her story isn't an anomaly. Diane Sawyer and I began traveling across the country, and we found more and more women just like Kristen. Women who dearly wanted to become pregnant, and then things went horribly wrong. We reached out to about 50 women. Several said it was too painful to relive their experiences publicly, but 18 agreed to talk with us. We brought them together in one room in Denton, Texas.
I'm wondering how many of you almost didn't come. Any of you? How many of you felt you had to come?
When Diane asked this question, every hand in the room goes up.
Lauren, why?
I don't think people realize how common this is. As strange as it is to say, we're not that unique.
These women have traveled from 10 different states. Most of them are complete strangers, different ages and races, with views across the political spectrum. But they have one thing in common. They wanted these pregnancies. Some of them learned they were carrying babies with fatal conditions. They were told they had to carry their babies to bury them. Others needed abortions to save their health, their fertility, and in some cases, their lives.
There's an irony to it, too, because we all feel so traumatized by what we went through, and yet, in a sick way, lucky that we came out of it.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. This is the best case scenario right here before you, is traumatized, both physically and psychologically, women.
But alive.
But we're alive.
When things started going wrong with these women's pregnancies, they couldn't get the help they needed from their own doctors. Partially because of the restrictions and penalties of these new laws, but also because of the confusion surrounding them.
Our doctors don't speak legalese. Mm-hmm. They don't know what is considered, you know, okay and not okay based on how the laws are written.
Well, did you all try to figure it out? How did you go on Googling and trying to see what the law?
And when we asked these women, is this about abortion or is this about health care? They told us healthcare.
I mean, did you find clarity about what they think the life of the mother is or the health of a mother is?
Nobody knows, and it's so confusing. And I want a doctor with a medical degree, not a doctor with a law degree. Yeah.
So when can doctors act to save the life of the mother in these 21 states? These women found it just wasn't clear, and they were the ones waiting for an answer.
How do you respond when the doctors who were trained medically to help sick people are telling you that they cannot?
You don't.
You don't respond.
Their hands are tied. Their hands are tied. They're facing prosecution.
There's no response.
Yeah, I was
Completely.
What do you?
We followed these women's journeys intimately over the last several months. They took us into the most vulnerable moments of their lives, to their clinic appointments, to the nurseries they lovingly created but would remain empty. They even told us the names they'd chosen for their babies.
My daughter was going to be Miley Rose.
My son's name was Eamon Blake.
Ivy Grace.
Monica.
Elijah.
My son's name was Baron.
That last voice, the woman whose son was named Baron, that's Blair Nelson. It's Blair's story that shows just how much these laws have changed women's lives.
Tell me about your journey, your family.
Oh, goodness. It's a long journey. We started trying.
Blair found out she was pregnant in September of 2022 after several grueling rounds of IVF.
With our sixth embryo transfer, we got pregnant. And it was a very uneventful pregnancy, to be honest, up until our appointment at just after 12 weeks, where we went in to see Dr. Thopel for
Blair knew Dr. John Thopel. He'd been with her through her previous IVF journey to have her daughter. She went in for her routine appointment and was in the middle of her ultrasound when she began to have a bad feeling.
And immediately I knew, looking up the screen, that something was wrong. The sonographer was very quiet. She kept looking at certain things, and you know, my husband's sitting next to me, he's filming it, and he could tell too, and he immediately puts his phone down. And you know, she said, I'm gonna go get your doctor. And I said, well, tell me what's wrong. And she said, I can't tell you what's wrong. And then immediately, you know, after I got up off the table and go sit down, I start going into this, okay, Blair, compose yourself, get your questions ordered in your head that you want to ask Dr. Thopel about, well, what does this mean? And immediately, like, one of the first things that popped into my head is the overturn of Roe v. Wade. And, like, what is that going to mean if this baby needs to be terminated for medical reasons?
Blair lives in Austin, Texas. And Texas was one of the first states to enact a so-called trigger law, banning abortion as soon as Roe v. Wade was overturned. In Texas, there's basically no way around the ban on access to abortion, not in the case of rape or incest, and not in the case of a terminal fetus like what Blair was dealing with. The closest thing that Blair could rely on was a narrow exception in the law to prevent the death of a mother. This is what was going through Blair's mind when Dr. Thopel came into the room and broke the devastating news about her baby. Dr. Thopel told me what happened to Blair was extremely rare.
We're talking about something that's less than 1 in 100,000. It's called limb body wall defect, but there's multiple malformations. I mean, this is a baby that's most of the time is going to die in utero. Rarely, you know, at birth is going to survive, not very long at all if you get to that point. So, you know, sometimes things are subtle, but you know when something is very, very wrong. And that's what the situation was.
Limb body wall defect. That means her son's organs were growing outside of his body, including his heart. But under Texas law, he had a heartbeat, which meant that Blair could not get a termination.
I start talking through out loud, like, okay, so if this baby's not viable with life, obviously that means I can't get care here. I'm gonna have to go somewhere. And so I just start asking all these questions, but I felt gutted and heartbroken and immediately angry at the policy in place and what that was likely gonna mean for my life and my husband's life.
And the stakes are high for doctors too. Remember, if they perform an illegal abortion, they can face fines, lose their medical licenses, or go to prison. And in Texas, there's an additional civil law. It's called SB 8. This law punishes anyone for aiding and abetting an unlawful abortion. Dr. Thopel explains SB 8 has a chilling effect.
That's, you know, really, really crippled our ability to have honest conversations with our patients.
In what way?
Well, you know, who defines what's aiding and abetting? Is bringing up, you know, hey, you know, have you thought about termination, or here are the options and the risks. So anybody, there's a bounty, basically an incentive for someone to say this person has aided. There's no penalties for making that allegation. You can win $10,000 in a court. There's no legal fees if they lose, right? So it is very, very difficult for a physician to figure out how do we frame this conversation in a way that someone can read between the lines.
Some doctors told us they were afraid to even say the word abortion, instead talking in code, suggesting to patients they may have to take a camping trip in California. So Dr. Thopel was left with an impossible situation. He could ignore Blair's option to travel out of state to get an abortion and continue to treat her through a non-viable pregnancy that endangered her own life day by day, or he could frame the conversation. But he had to do it carefully.
In that moment, as a doctor, were you afraid of how you were communicating
Sure.
what her options Yeah. were?
Yes, you always have to, you know, in this situation, I have to think, how can I say something and send a message without you know, violating what someone can perceive violates SB 8. It's a delicate dance. It's a very delicate dance.
How did you do it?
I think I said, this means one of the possibilities is that I might have to travel. And just kind of left it at that.
And I think that's it, right? It's a euphemism, yeah. Right? I mean, you're basically using code that you both know what you're talking about without talking about it.
Using code so Blair could get the health care she needed. Blair started to research clinics out of state on her own. She found a clinic in Colorado through a friend of a friend, one that didn't put any pictures of the building online, so it couldn't be found by any protesters.
And so I called there, and I was able to get an appointment for about a month later.
1 month later.
1 month later. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the waiting period was terrible. I didn't want to go to work. I didn't want people, because I was starting to look pregnant, and I didn't want to get questions about, are you having a boy or a girl? When are you due?
The next month, when Blair was 4 months pregnant, she and her husband traveled hundreds of miles to Colorado. They had never been there before. They went to a new clinic far from home and family and friends, and Blair started the 2-day process to terminate her pregnancy.
You know, I just remember like crying and pleading with the doctor, please give me as much anxiety medication and as much sedation as you can for both day one and day two of this. I don't want to feel anything. So they were incredible. I will say those doctors, I got lucky. That's not always the case when you have to travel like that. They're just complete strangers. They don't know you. They don't have a vest, you know, they don't have an emotional tie to you.
On the second day, the appointment took a sudden turn.
I was hemorrhaging. It went terribly wrong.
Dr. Thobel thinks Blair had a complication called placenta accreta, which can be undetectable early into pregnancy and develops over time. For Blair, the consequences for her future fertility could have been severe.
I was taken out of the back door of the abortion clinic, and I had to sit on a puppy pad in our rental car, and my husband had to rush me to the hospital because I was at risk of needing a blood transfusion. I had lost about a pint of blood, and I could either do a hysterectomy, removing my uterus and any chance of having future children, or I could do a uterine artery embolism surgery, which goes in and stops the main blood flow point into your uterus in hopes that it stops the bleeding. And my, you know, I think one thing I didn't realize is how scared my husband was. Will was stayed strong for me, but I think he was scared I was going to die at one point.
Blair's doctor back home in Texas, Dr. Thopel, argues the time it took her to find care out of state raised the risk for exactly this type of complication.
So that month delay allowed for this abnormal sort of process where you have this placenta invading, you know, into her uterus. That's where this added risk came. So she went through something that I don't think she would have had to if she didn't have this 1 month delay in care. The policies of Texas may have kept her from ever having a kid again. So the irony of all these laws that have been put in place, you know, to supposedly protect the sanctity of life, we might have stopped the ability to create life, right? This was, as you've heard, a very, very desired pregnancy. And I really would like to believe these are unintended consequences and born out of ignorance. And that's why I'm hoping that we're sharing the message to those that I think want to do the right thing. You're hurting people in Texas. You're absolutely hurting people in Texas.
Dr. Thopel also told us he thinks these laws are weakening the whole system of maternal health.
It's harder to recruit OB-GYNs to come to Texas. You know, I think we're gonna see a downstream effect of women being hurt because we're gonna lose access to care.
In fact, according to the Association of American Medical Colleges, there was a 10.5% decrease in OBGYN applicants in states with abortion bans in 2023 compared to the year prior. Dr. Thopel says it's one of the many ripple effects.
I think the biggest point that I always try to make every time I have the opportunity is I think the people that created these laws are unfortunately equating elective abortion with these scenarios, and they're completely different things. And ultimately, I think the politicians are starting to see what they've done. I think that they realize we made a mistake and are now hopefully working on trying to figure out how to backtrack on what they've already done. But how many thousands of women have been hurt in the process?
We reached out to the state legislators who wrote and supported these laws to ask if they took into account complications like these. Florida State Senator Aaron Grawl told us the law, quote, allows the physician to consider the life of the mother as the family is making decisions about what to do in these very personal and horrible moments. In previous testimony, she's accused doctors of, quote, playing games within politics around an exception that has existed in the law for years. In Tennessee, State Representative Esther Helton Haynes told us she's working to clarify the laws in her state so that if an emergency occurs during a pregnancy, doctors must be allowed to take the actions necessary to save the mother's life without fear of prosecution. Other Republican state legislators who initially supported these abortion bans did try to amend the laws to clarify the exceptions, but most faced overwhelming opposition from other Republicans who worried the exceptions would become too broad, a slippery slope. As for the women we spoke to, many are just trying to get on with their lives. They go to work, they parent their other children, or they dream of one day becoming mothers. Since we spoke with Blair, she's given us an update. She and her husband are trying to get pregnant again. Their next embryo transfer is now scheduled for February. But these laws that ban access to abortion, the ones that create confusion and hesitation for women to get care, they still remain. And other women are still at risk of ending up in the same situation, and not everyone can afford to travel out of state. The next woman who finds herself in this situation might be like Kristen, who developed sepsis. Like Blair, hemorrhaging in the backseat of a rental car hundreds of miles away from her home. Or Anya, who was denied an abortion in a hospital and ended up delivering a non-viable fetus in the bathroom of a hair salon and losing half her blood. Or Elizabeth, sent home and told to wait until she could smell her infection. The woman we found from across the country, there were so many close calls. Has anyone died as a result of these laws? Because maternal mortality figures lag by 2 years, we won't know the full impact of these laws for some time. But these are early dispatches from a post-Roe America, where doctors are seeing women pushed to the brink.
Incredible reporting by Rachel and Diane there. And by the way, there's news happening in this space. You might remember we told you on Start Here about the story of this Texas woman who sued for an emergency abortion on medical grounds. The judge granted it initially, then it was appealed. Well, now it's been overturned by a higher court. She's had to go to another state to get this abortion that her doctors deemed medically necessary. Meanwhile, some of the 18 women ABC spoke to are part of another lawsuit. They're suing the state of Texas for clarity around what it means to be an exception to this law. We'll be tracking that. You can hear more of Rachel Scott's investigation on The Brink with Diane Sawyer on Impact by Nightline. It's streaming right now on Hulu, then it airs tonight on Nightline on ABC. Special thanks to Tess Scott, Christina Ng, Acacia Nunez, and Joshua Shikitano from Diane Sawyer's team. Iman Viroqua, Karen Weinberg, Kinez Walker, and Laura Coburn from Nightline, along with Madeline Wood, Vika Aronson, and Sasha Aslanian, who produced the Start Here special. Laura Mayer is the executive producer of ABC Audio. We get all the news of the day on our regular edition of Start Here that's just above this pod in the feed. I'm Brad Milkey. I'll see you tomorrow.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make The View, The View.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The View's Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.